Following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 2:16 a.m., July 18th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
But this bill doesn't just cut coverage and hike premiums, all for a tax cut for the wealthy. It codifies a worldview by this administration that is dead set on dividing America along the lines of the God of your prayers, who you love, where you come from, or your fate and fortune. We see it in their tax plan, in their budget cuts, in immigration policy, and now in healthcare. It is the ultimate test of the character of this country confronting our chamber today. Not the power we give the strong, but the strength with which we embrace the weak. Thank you.
That was Joe Kennedy fighting to save our healthcare in the House. Hi. Thank you for listening to K Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly the Voice. Right off the bat, spread the word. This is important. Border Patrol says it's barred from searching cloud data on phones. In a letter sent to Senator Wyden's office, Customs and Border Protection admitted, apparently for the first time, not only are U.S. border officers not allowed to look at data stored only on the cloud, including social media data, email, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, among others, when they search U.S. travelers' phones, but it also states that it doesn't have the authority to search them in the first place. The letter says that officers can search a phone without consent and except in very limited cases without a warrant or even suspicion, but only for content that is saved directly onto the device, like call histories, text messages, contacts, photos, videos, etc. Therefore, border searches conducted by CPB do not extend to the information that is located solely on remote servers. Dude, we don't even have to unlock our phones or hand over passwords when asked. But it does say that if we refuse, officers can, quote, detain our phone. So spread the word and share this with your friends coming over. All right, there are two bills on the docket this week that are worth calling our senators about. One is H.R. 806, Ozone Standards Implementation Act of 2017. This bill would provide states with additional time and flexibility to implement the EPA's revised ground-level ozone and air quality standards. The EPA standard lowers the allowable amount of ozone from 75 parts per billion to 70 parts per billion. It was originally proposed in 2008, but the implementing regulations were not published until 2015. The review cycle for the National Ambient Air Quality Standards would be extended so that pollutants under the Clean Air Act are reviewed over 10 years instead of 5.
Isn't the new EPA doing enough to gut its regulations without the damn House getting on board too?
And get this, the CBO estimates that enacting the bill would cost $2 million over the period between 2018 and 2020. Why are these fiscally responsible Republicans paying money to tell states they don't have to do anything for the environment?
You suck!
All right, we also have H.R. 2910, Promoting Coordination for Review of Natural Gas Pipelines Act. This bill would direct the Federal Energy Regulation Commission, FERC, to create a process for coordinating reviews between federal, state, and local agencies in which it could serve as lead agency when sitting natural gas pipelines that cross state lines. The Republicans put this out. Federal, state, and local law agencies should be able to carry out environmental reviews of interstate natural gas pipelines at their own pace, even if that means that timelines for the reviews and decisions to authorize pipelines don't match. Restrictions on those who can request a review of environmental impact makes it easier to hide potentially harmful effects. This is simply a bill to fast-track building pipelines by giving final authority to the federal government. I do not believe in taking state and local governments out of this procedure, but you can make up your own mind about those. And now, some news. If you live in Fresno, you will be welcoming about 20 million visitors. Because science. A company owned by Google's parent company, Alphabet, is set to release male mosquitoes infected with a bacteria that, while harmless to humans, creates non-hatching dead eggs when they mate with wild females. Hopefully, This will cut the mosquito population and the transmission of diseases they carry. If it works, this will be a big deal. In Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, the resistance to a pipeline is being waged by 30 Catholic nuns. They constructed an open-air chapel, a visible symbol of their commitment to the land on the proposed path of a natural gas pipeline. They were in court on Monday, fighting efforts by the fossil fuel company trying to seize their farmland. Resistance comes in many forms. The fate of the Sisters Cornfield chapter remains uncertain. As the Washington Post reported, U.S. appeals court judges have ruled inconsistently on whether federal law protects religious groups from eminent domain cases. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, which covers Delaware, New Jersey, and the part of Pennsylvania where the nuns reside, has yet to issue a ruling on the matter. Legal observers say the case could make its way to the Supreme Court, which could cause an interesting crisis of conscience for the Republican Great White Hope, Neil Gorsuch. Does he submit to the masters of religion or the masters of oil? Religion or oil? Religion or oil? Only time will tell. In California, there was a crazy vote of bipartisanship, and that vote was on climate change. 8. Count them, 8 Republicans, in a break with party leaders, voted with Democrats to continue the cap-and-trade program, which requires companies to buy permits to release greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. The legislation would keep the 5-year-old program operating until 2030, providing a key tool for meeting the state's ambitious goal of slashing emissions. Maybe there is hope for some of these red representatives after all. Senator John McCain, the old bastard, has been held up in Arizona recovering from surgery, and seeing as the great turtle himself, Mitch McConnell, can't spare a single vote to take away healthcare from millions, McTurtle has postponed the vote. Was exactly what I was writing in preparation for this show when the news hit that Mike Lee and Jerry Moran tweeted that they were officially no votes. Kansas came out hard against this bill. There was a strong resistance while Moran was home from his liberal and his conservative constituents alike. And despite the delay, resistance groups had not given up and had not used this delay as an excuse to scale back their efforts to stop the legislation. In fact, progressive organizations and activists across the country were teaming up this week to further ramp up the pressure, hoping to capitalize on the bill's deep unpopularity. From the first days of this healthcare bill in the House, protesters descended on the representatives till this very Monday. At the so-called moderate Republicans, including Rob Portman of Ohio's and Dean Heller's in Nevada's offices. No matter one's feelings on Obamacare, the fact is 20 million people have insurance today that didn't before the ACA. The change is coming to Washington. It is not starting in Washington, and they are having no choice but to react. Now, as of recording this show, the bill is not dead. Remember what happened in the House? And now McCain will hold a vote to simply repeal Obamacare with the 2-year delay, an even more draconian vote. They don't have a strong hope of getting this one passed, but there always remains a chance. Stay engaged, stay involved, and resist. Not to bum everyone out, but in case you missed it, last Wednesday, our fearless leader interrupted his cuddle session with Fox News to prove the nation's first Arctic drilling project since Shell's failed attempt in 2015. The NRDC, the National Resource Defense Council, is pushing back hard against this, especially in federal court, to block Trump's offshore drilling push. Should you want to donate to them and their effort, go to the NRDC website or go to the link on my Facebook page at K-Voice of Resistance. I wish I could say I was moving on to brighter news, but it's 2017, so good news can be in short supply. If you or someone you know is thinking about pulling yourself off of the voter rolls in reaction to Donald's insidious damn voter fraud commission, please, please, please don't.
It is doing exactly what he wants.
NBC News reports that thousands of peeved voters are removing themselves from state voter rolls, prompted by the fear that their personal information could be revealed by the commission. The number of those unregistering ranges from several thousand in Colorado to hundreds in Vermont and a handful in a couple other states, as voters mount a mutiny to the Presidential Commission on Election Integrity, which was formed in May, to study vulnerabilities in the American election system, otherwise known as the Prove Donald Got the Most Votes in History Commission. Since June 28th, since the panel's letter was sent to all the states requesting voter information, until last Friday, Colorado has seen 3,738 voters strike their names from voter rolls, and another 200 voters requesting their information be made confidential as permitted by law. Now, of those 3,738, 2,000 were Democrats. Come on, guys! And only 400 were Republicans. That is according to the Secretary of State's office. The only good news out of this is, while in other states officials have been getting calls about unregistering, few have followed through. Guys, we can't start doing his goddamn bidding. That's all. What if one company owned all the seeds for all the food crops planted around the world? All the corn, all the soy, all the wheat, all the rice, all owned by one corporation. What if that same company also owned all the fertilizer and all the pesticides? Would it matter? Would that kind of consolidation make food security more or less likely? I know. This is a silly hypothetical. Fine. What if it were two corporations then instead of one? Three? What if it were four companies instead of one? We're about to find out. In the space of roughly 1 year, the so-called Big Six ag biotech companies announced three mega mergers. First, in December 2015, Dow and DuPont announced a merger of equals, combining into a $130 billion company. Less than 2 months later, in February 2016, Syngenta announced that it had agreed to be purchased by ChemChina for $43 billion. In September 2016, Monsanto announced its own deal. It accepted a $66 billion merger proposal from Bayer, the former producer of World War II poison gas, in which it supplied large amounts of Zyklon B to the Nazi government. When the dust settles, the world will be left with four extremely large ag biotech companies. Herr Trump, never afraid of doing the truly heinous, is about to greenlight the merger. Monsanto produces Roundup, originally manufactured by Monsanto in the production of Agent Orange in World War II, in addition to producing genetically engineered seeds and designed to withstand the herbicide, Roundup. Bayer, which I can't say often enough, was a Nazi contractor during World War II and used forced labor, manufactures neonicotinoid pesticides, which have been implicated in bee die-offs. So what do we get in turn for their profits? Fewer options at higher cost. And environmental carnage. The Monsanto-Bayer merger would create a monopoly over our food and agriculture. These types of mergers in the past have led to higher seed prices and higher herbicide and pesticide prices for American farmers. These newly created companies will control nearly 70% of the world's pesticide market, more than 61% of commercial seed sales, and 80% of the U.S. corn and seed market. The model of agriculture these companies represent, to put it nicely, is problematic, not only because of the damage it inflicts by pesticides, but also because of their effects on climate change, the loss of biodiversity, threat to health of farm workers, and an inability to ensure food sovereignty. Farming is by far one of America's oldest occupations and one of the toughest. Price hikes in seeds have already made their costs skyrocket. Groups in the U.S. and Europe have been fighting and protesting this merger. Recently, nearly 325 farming, beekeeping, farmworker, religious, food safety, and conservation advocacy groups formally urged the Department of Justice and Jefferson Burgard Sessions to strictly review the merger. I've posted a couple petitions on my Facebook page, K Voice of Resistance, to sign to oppose this merger. In the next 2 weeks before these mergers happen, someofus.org will be running ads, staggering grassroots protests, conducting opinion polls, and much more to build an enormous amount of pressure so regulators don't pass this dangerous merger. This merger is far from inevitable, and we're already gaining traction in our fight to stop it. Some of Us has hired the world's top lawyers to analyze the merger, gaining coverage in influential outlets like Bloomberg and the Financial Times. Some of Us has waged offline protests to raise visibility and gotten stars like Mark Ruffalo to help spread the word. Now that Bayer has filed its papers in the European Union, they can use a whole new slew of tactics to put pressure on regulators to do the right thing. They can lobby the EU directly, run ads, take opinion polls, and launch grassroots demonstrations. Look, we've defeated mergers like this before. We did it when Comcast tried to take over Time Warner. But we must act quickly and strategically. If you are planning on donating money somewhere this month, Some of Us may be a good place to do it. Go to someofus.org, that is sumofus.org. If you would like to donate, I've also posted a link to them on my Facebook page as well, K-Voice of Resistance. From man-made disasters, to natural disasters, to financial shocks, to terror shocks, one thing is inevitable. Bad things happen. In Paris, France, in 2015, three coordinated attack teams set out in Paris to kill as many people in various emblems of daily Parisian life. First was at a packed football stadium. Luckily, the terrorist was not able to get through security, so the bomb was detonated outside the stadium and only killing the terrorist and one passerby. The explosion could be heard inside the stadium. At the same time, 15 people were killed in a hail of bullets by an automatic weapon as they dined at a restaurant in the center of town. That was followed by 5 and then 19 killed at even more locations. The deadliest attack of the night, however, came at a concert venue. The 1,500-seat Bataclan Hall was sold out. 89 people died as men fired Kalashnikov-style assault rifles into the crowd. In response, the socialist president, Hollande, issued a state of emergency.
Mes chers compatriotes, au moment où je m'exprime,
Hollande convened a special congress for what was to be 3 months. He made changes to the French constitution, one of which would enable France to protect itself from dual citizens who might pose a risk, and increase military attacks against ISIS. Hollande's state of emergency banned political protest. It was a concert, a football stadium, and restaurants that were targeted, yet only outdoor political activity was not permitted. And that state of emergency, under which Human Rights Watch found repeated abuses against ordinary people during policing operations under emergency powers, the state of emergency decree was extended again and again until it had been in place for over a year. And now, President Macron has sought to extend it through November. In France, a state of emergency is now the new normal. France also deployed throughout the city over 10,000 troops under what was known as Operation Sentinel. After the London bombing at the Ariana Grande concert in May, the conservative Theresa May used the attack to lie about her opponent, Jeremy Corbyn, who, I am pleased to say, kicked butt in the election despite this dire proclamation.
This choice that people face at the general election has just become starker. It's a choice between me working constantly to protect the national interest and to protect our security, and Jeremy Corbyn, who frankly isn't up to the job.
In addition, UK's terror threat level, that delightful system, was raised to critical, its highest level. In the aftermath of the attack, the controversial Operation Temporaire was activated for the first time, allowing up to 5,000 soldiers to be deployed to, quote, augment armed police officers engaged in productive security duties. Not only that,
The Conservative government declared that any expectation of privacy in digital communications was now a threat to national security and began working with cyber companies to gain backdoor access to encrypted platforms like WhatsApp, and even stronger calls by the government to crack down on internet privacy after the London Bridge attack were made. In the case of France, after the Paris attacks, those actions were taken under a center-left government. And as Naomi Klein, the author of The Shock Doctrine, points out, we would be naive to assume that Donald and Mikey Pence would not, in the same name of authoritarian protection, jump at the opportunity provided by an attack to shut down political action, deploy troops, reduce rights to privacy, and who knows what else. Klein believes that protests like the ones that we had after the Muslim ban, where the roads and airports were blocked, would be strictly banned, and protest organizers would be targeted, surveilled, arrested, and imprisoned. And in the courts? Our friends, the courts. Remember after the judge struck down the Muslim ban, Trump tweets that said, "Just can't believe a judge would put our country in such peril. If something happens, blame him and the court system," unquote. The courts may be less likely to take a hard line in the defense of what is right in the face of lost American lives. And then there are the large groups of people that are at risk of being rounded up. It's happened before. The Japanese internment camps were in our not-too-distant past. Investigative journalists, Black Lives Matter protesters and organizers, Hispanics, Muslims, and even climate activists are all at risk. It is crazy to think that these things are possible, but at this point, a whole host of things are possible and have already been done that I have never imagined before. Klein makes the point that in the name of freeing the hands of law enforcement to fight terrorism, Attorney General Jefferson Beauregard Sessions were finally have that excuse he's been looking for to do away with federal oversight, a state and local police, and set them loose. Especially those localities that have been accused of systemic racial abuses. The full weight of Donald, Mikey's, and the GOP's more radical agenda has not been fully enacted, or even attempted. But make no mistake that it is decoupaged onto Donald and Bannon's stream wall, waiting for its first national shock, such as a terror attack, to be made real. And it is about as cynical as a thing as I have come to understand about anything. But we have the power to prevent it. Naomi Klein suggested in her first step in preventing this is to know what is coming. And here is step two.
Get out of your home and defy the bans. When governments tell people to stay in their homes or show their patriotism by going shopping, they inevitably claim it's for public safety, that protests and rallies could become targets for more attacks. What we know from other countries is that there is only one way to respond.
Hundreds of Tunisians have been defying the curfew in the capital, Tunis.
Disobey en masse. That's what happened in Argentina in 2001. With the country in economic freefall, the president at the time declared a state of siege, giving himself the power to suspend the Constitution.
Decretado el estado de sitio en todo el territorio nacional.
He told the public to stay in their houses. Here's what they did instead. The president resigned that night, and eventually new elections were held. 3 years later, in Madrid, a horrifying series of coordinated attacks on trains killed more than 200 people. The prime minister, José María Aznar, falsely pointed the finger at Basque separatists and also used the attacks to justify his decision to send troops to Iraq. His rhetoric was classic shock doctrine. Division, war, fear, daddy will protect you. This is how Spaniards responded. They voted out Aznar a few days later. Many people said they did it because he reminded them of Franco, Spain's former dictator.
Feeling hopeless these days? I am, often, and increasingly. And yet I fall back onto the words of Mr. Rogers, and I look for the helpers. So long as there are people working to help and instead of hurt, there is hope. And if not immediately, well, we may have helpers in our future. Millennials are the largest generation in history, 95 million compared to just about 78 million of baby boomers, which is great news for the LGBTQ community. A Pew Research Center poll found 70% of millennials support same-sex marriage rights, while only 49% of Gen Xers support it, and just 38% of baby boomers.
Generation Y, the so-called selfie generation, is the most educated generation in history, according to Pew. Millennials barely question the science, on which 97% of client scientists agree that global warming is real and man-made. Pew found that a majority of millennials believe that we should do all we can to protect the environment, including imposing stricter government regulations. 71% favor the development of alternative sources of energy, like wind and solar, and two-thirds of millennials say they recycle. And then there is this, the most important priority in their lives. According to Pew, the most important priority in their lives is to be a good parent. That is followed by having a successful marriage and helping others in need. Two-thirds of millennials actually define success as being smart and well-read. 84% say making a difference in the world is more important than professional recognition, and 92% believe businesses should be measured by more than their profits. So long as we don't blow up the earth before millennials get a chance to save it, we just may make it in the end. Thank you for listening to K-Voice of Resistance. I appreciate all the listens and all the downloads. You can find my show on crabdiving.com. That is one word, C-R-A-B-D-I-V-I-N-G, under the K-Voice tab. Listen to the other great programming on the Crab Diving Network. You can also download my show as a podcast wherever it is you pod. And now, you can also find my show at Citizen Truth at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice or on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. Okay, as I was recording this, news of the House Republican budget bill that slashes billions in spending, paving way for huge tax cuts for the rich, came out. We'll get to it next episode. All right, everybody. Take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
You know, my mother used to say, a long time ago, whenever there would be any really catastrophe that was in the movies or on the air, she would say, always look for the helpers. There will always be helpers, you know, even just on the sidelines. That's why I think that if news programs could make a conscious effort of showing rescue teams, of showing who medical people, anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy, to be sure that they include that. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.